This section will be approximately 23 minutes. We're going to spend a little bit of time unpacking working with calculated risks. And these are distinct from forced risk, which you're about to read about. But the calculated risks, I want to give you a few tools to help strengthen and refine your more autonomous functioning in terms of how can you take risks. And then we'll talk a little bit about elegance, which involves stepping beyond these more autonomous and conventional orientations. But nonetheless, these are going to be some important things that you're going to practice and work with as a means of building the foundation and the strength and resilience of your autonomy as a means to step beyond it. Calculated risks inherently involve rehearsal. And that's what makes it calculated, is it you actually have the opportunity to rehearse in your mind's eye how you're going to engage with the risk. The most basic process of rehearsal is what some call emotional rehearsal, and I'm just going to call it mental and emotional rehearsal. And this is typically what we do in private. When we're about to step into a more significant situation and we find ourselves in a less significant situation, we'll leverage the period of our life that appears to be less influential and less significant as a means of rehearsing some situation that is more significant. And this mental and emotional rehearsal is we're playing situations out in our mind's eye. And so if we're about to get on stage and talk to people, for example, oftentimes we're not watching the presentation or even paying attention or listening to who is speaking just before you. We're using that time to rehearse exactly what we're going to do. Similarly, if you're in a group and everybody's sharing something about yourself, right before it's your turn to go, you probably aren't listening to the person next to you. At least this is a more conventional way of orienting to life. You're not listening to them. You can't hear anything that they're saying because you're actually rehearsing how you're going to present yourself. And this is a basic form of mental and emotional rehearsal. So I want you to pick up and intentionally leverage mental and emotional rehearsal to figure out how do you want to deal with the more calculated risks that you want to take in your life. And this typically is done in private. It's kind of a private part of your experience. It may be done actually when you actually are alone. And it might also be done in conversation with somebody who you trust. Hey, I'm about to do this. I want to talk to you. Let me bounce a few things off of you. And that's another form of emotional rehearsal. But the vast majority of this is done privately in your own mind. Even if people are around, you're rehearsing how are you going to present yourself. So that's the first tool. And you probably are likely familiar with this. But just to bring a little bit more consciousness and intentionality to this more natural function of the autonomous mind. The second dimension that I want to invite you to play with is energetic experimentation. So in terms of stepping closer into taking a risk, before you jump into the full behavioral exploration of I've never done this before, or I've never quite inhabited this particular part of myself and now I'm doing it, there's a bridge between those, and this energetic experimentation is that bridge. And so if you're rehearsing how to step in to, let's say, your power, right, you might start to energetically experiment with somebody who you need to step into your power with. Now, maybe that, an example would be taking a stand at work, or maybe taking a stand in your intimate relationship, like really inhabiting your power and making a clear request for the people around you to respect certain things about yourself, or maybe even rooting yourself firmly in terms of this is who I am, and I'm, and this is, this whole disposition is my most greatest integrity, and I will not move. And but before we demonstrate that, we might energetically start to explore that the quality of power. So I might be in conversation with a supervisor or a boss, or maybe some other key stakeholders in the organization who hold tremendous relative power. And I might start to energetically, privately, again in my own experience, start to inhabit the kind of power that needs to come forward. And I'm not quite fully bringing it into my words. I'm not quite fully bringing it into my behavior yet. But I'm starting to, my body posture might be changing, and the energetic tone of how I'm speaking might get stronger, and I might feel this quality of power showing up, right? And I like to call this energetic experimentation. And I encourage you to use this as a bridge between just your private rehearsal, right, and when you actually step into taking the actual risk behaviorally. So we can start to play with some of the energetic qualities before we start taking the risks in a more provocative way. And then so the third piece is just the behavioral experimentation. And this is the embodied formulations that shift the culture and consciousness around you and within you. And your words are behavior. Suzanne Cook-Greuter, one of the foremost thinkers in terms of adult development, refers to language as verbal behavior. So what you actually say and how you say it is part of this behavioral experimentation. And here we're really giving voice to new and provocative and more risky dimensions of ourselves that might need to be practiced and exercised and engaged and cultivated and refined. So we've got the verbal quality of this experiment in behavior, and then we have the more behavioral cues as we think about it, like how is your body moving and what actions are you taking up, and this is where the greatest amount of risk is, because you're actually pressing into or cutting into the culture and consciousness of everybody around you. And some people, that might just be not a big deal at all. It might not even be much to even spend a whole lot of time thinking about. It might be a huge deal for you inside. But others might just be like, okay, cool. And other times, it's going to be, it's going to rock other people's boats. And we'll circle back on this. But this risk-taking, these calculated risks, are a great way for you to explore the greater diversity of who you are as a human being. And there's a good chance that the world that you live in, as well as just who you are and who you need to be in the world privately with yourself, requires this larger diversity of who you are. This all, however, is an expression of the diversity of your autonomous self. And this is good, however, it's still somewhat limited, and it doesn't quite get us into the territory of elegance as we're exploring in this text. You're going to learn more about this, the quality of elegance that requires you to step beyond the merely internally directed and more mediated risks in life, right? Your elegance involves a confidence to participate in and with experiments that take risks without rehearsal. So the level of risk goes up dramatically. The level of control is turned down. But as we explore later on in The Elegant Self, you'll see that we get more and more facility for working with the precise immediacy of life. Now, you might notice that the more autonomous way of rehearsing has to do with situation by situation, right? So we talked about maybe getting up on stage, and you might rehearse that situation. Here's what I'm going to do first, and then this happens, and then I'm going to focus on this, and then I'm going to open things up for questions. That might be one way that we can think about rehearsing a situation. Or let me rehearse the situation of taking a stand with my executive team. Again, there's this meeting, it's supposed to last this amount of time, and I'm going to really focus in on, like, this is where I need to take the stand, and here's what I'm going to say. And it's, you know, maybe it's a couple paragraphs, or it's, you know, it's probably going to take me about 2 or 3 minutes to really get out the essence of what I need to. So I'm going to rehearse that situation. When we look at the larger maturity of the human being, those 2 to 3 minutes is not just one area for me to demonstrate myself, right? For me to actually express myself. It's actually a very complex, rich, dense, complex few minutes of life that there's tremendous opportunity for me to demonstrate who I am, for me to articulate who I am, but also for me to take in information and actually receive what's going on in other people. And part of what you're more post-conventional and what you'll learn more about as post-autonomous capacities as a human being is that you can process information, a tremendous wealth of information, from different sources. So your internal private experience can be processed. The external social relational domain of information can be processed simultaneously. So I don't need to get lost just in my interior and then shuttle back to, okay, what's going on for those people out there? There's some facility in you that can start to attune to both simultaneously. And this is a really refined and highly polished skill, but it creates, or is in many ways, elegance. Or elegant. And this is an experimentation moment to moment, because we're honing in, we're dialing in a very nuanced way, precisely what's going on in the immediacy right now. And I can play with the energetic qualities, the behavioral dimensions, the ability for me to assert and extend and express, as well as receive and digest and move in concert. And because our experimentation is less coarse, it can actually be more refined. We're doing kind of micro experimentation moment to moment. And we might have an agenda of where we want to be in a few minutes. But oftentimes when we really start to plunge in with elegance and participate, we are suspicious of my private, more autonomous, self-directed agenda. But I really want to be in this position in a few minutes. At our post-conventional and post-autonomous dimensions of ourselves, we're a little suspicious of that agenda, but we're really curious about, all right, let's experiment right now as a means of discovering and co-creating who I am and who we are together. So part of what we can see is emerging here is what we might call spontaneity. There's some ability to experiment in the moment and then spontaneously, based on that immediate feedback, something responsive happens. And it's not rehearsed. It's not mediated in the more conventional sense. But it's actually moving with something really profound. And I'll come back to this point, but I want to differentiate spontaneity as something that's radically different from impulsivity or just kind of like doing what feels good. And so impulsivity is really being stuck in my own private world and agenda. And we see it most powerfully operating in children and adolescents. They just feel like doing something and it happens, right? And that's way, way different from the spontaneity that I'm pointing to. So a few differences. First, spontaneity always includes a extremely high, refined, polished personal responsibility. People who are participating in their elegance, they're not getting rid of responsibility. They're heightening it. They're refining it. Impulsivity, in contrast, is a lack of personal responsibility. Well, I just felt like doing it, so it's happening. And when I'm challenged on that, I usually get defensive and I'm not wanting to kind of take responsibility for how it's impacted you or the people around me. And that's not the case with spontaneity. We're being spontaneous as a means of being highly responsible for both ourselves and others. And that doesn't mean that we're going to try to always get rid of conflict or not get people upset. That's not the case. But it does mean that spontaneity includes, it integrates, it encompasses a very highly polished personal responsibility. The second difference is that spontaneity, it comprehends cultural norms. Impulsivity tends to not, right? So my impulsivity might actually just trounce all over cultural norms without any awareness of it. Spontaneity might still be breaking cultural norms, but it's actually consciously doing it. There's actually some intentionality there. I'm actually choosing to do this counterinstinctual move, and it appears as though I'm being very hostile. But if you feel into the energy, right, there's actually a curiosity about this level of aggression and how it might actually be necessary for this particular initiative that we're engaged in, just to give you a little bit of a taste. Whereas, again, the impulsivity, it's just my private personal needs, preferences, and agenda is just more significant than anything else. And in many cases, when we're captivated by our impulsive or imperial qualities, we're actually ignorant. In those moments, we actually don't understand and can't see, and it's not part of the data stream of consideration. I just don't care about cultural norms in my impulsivity. The third piece is that spontaneity moves, it actually adheres to a higher principle entirely. And impulsivity adheres to a personal narcissism, right? Not in the pathological sense, but just the principle that's guiding you is, it's just what you want. And what we find with elegance, what we find in the higher stages of development, is that these individuals are usually adhering to a much higher principle or set of principles that are organizing and governing their experience. And if you ask them, they may give you a more autonomous response and like, yeah, no, these are the things that are really important to me and I'm holding them. But most of the time, they'll describe principles that are larger than them, that actually own them. They actually hold them and guide them, and they're smaller than the principles, right? So, you know, it might be love. It might be integrity. It might be this concept of elegance, regardless of what it is, but there's some higher principle entirely that's guiding them. And they're not always able to articulate what that is, particularly when it's first starting to move them. They're not going to be clear about it, and they're going to point towards some, I don't exactly have the words for it, I can't exactly articulate what it is, but I'm congruent. I'm trying to move my body mind in a way that is congruent with this unknown emergent quality of my experience that feels profoundly important. So finally, just to close, this level of post-autonomous spontaneity will get you into trouble from time to time. So I just want to blatantly state that, because it's important to acknowledge it, that just because it's highly refined and highly nuanced doesn't mean that you're not going to get in trouble. There's a couple reasons for this. One is, as you're experimenting with risks, you're often going to be challenging the conventions of your own private culture of mind. And this is going to bring up a bunch of anxiety and uncertainty and questioning as to what you're doing. And it's also gonna be stepping across boundaries, maybe subtly, but maybe very overtly, that the culture around you holds as being incredibly important and perhaps even sacred. And there's some part of you that has a confidence to actually swim upstream in the face of these things. So you, and this is, there's a revolutionary quality to this energy. And it is in part also rebellious, but it's not the pre-conventional rebellion that we usually find in adolescence. It's a post-conventional rebellion or revolutionary quality of, I'm actually after some kind of reshaping of culture and consciousness around me. And sometimes the culture around you is going to turn towards you and thank you immensely. And other times, the culture surrounding you is going to go on attack as a means of defending the more conventional orientations. And these are the juicy areas, and for both you and your own private culture of mind to grow and evolve and be refined, as well as the collective culture around you.